Welcome to the Side Hustle Project, a podcast where we explore the nitty-gritty details behind what it takes to start and grow a profitable side hustle. I'm your host, Ryan Robinson. In this podcast, I'm bringing you interviews with entrepreneurs, best-selling authors, CEOs, investors, and people just like you who are building and profiting from interesting side hustles. In today's episode, we're talking to Vanessa Van Edwards, a behavioral investigator and national best-selling author of her recent book, Captivate, Using Science to Succeed with People. Vanessa is also a corporate speaker, body language trainer, and has had her work featured on CNN, Forbes, NPR, and many, many other outlets. I originally got to meet Vanessa when she came through Creative Live to teach a series of online classes about topics like mastering your people skills, body language, and how to become a more effective negotiator. On top of everything else she does, Vanessa also runs Science of People, her human behavior research lab, blog, and hub for educational resources on all things charisma, influence, and understanding people. Today's interview is another that I originally recorded for the Inside Sales Summit last fall. And that was the event that I put together with Close.io, the Inside Sales CRM of choice for startups. And for that event, I did interviews with people like Vanessa and Grant Cardone, Steli FD, Michelle Romanow, Neil Patel, and many more. So if you enjoy what you hear today and you want to keep this fun going, then check out the other 50 plus interviews just like this one over at InsideSalesSummit.com. But for today, we're here with Vanessa Van Edwards. In this episode, Vanessa and I talk about how to become a better salesperson, whether that's in your day job or with a side project, through developing a better understanding of how to more effectively interact and engage with other people. We dive into Vanessa's best tips, advice, and strategies for negotiation, pitching yourself and your products, building trust, creating confidence with your early customers. We cover the biggest mistakes people tend to make when they're trying to sell their own products, how to overcome these types of pitfalls, Vanessa's selling tips, especially for introverts, and much more. As always, you can find everything we mentioned in today's episode in the show notes at ryrob.com/podcast. That's spelled ryrob.com/podcast. Let's get into today's interview with Vanessa Van Edwards. Vanessa, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, Vanessa. So one thing I know you talk a lot about and how I think I originally got introduced to your work is using confident body language. And now with demos and pitches increasingly moving over to things like video calls, how do you convey that same level of trust, confidence, positive energy even when you're doing a virtual meeting with someone?
Yeah. So actually, we just finished a study in our lab and we were looking at the how our body language changes our vocal power. So ideally, in a dream world, you're sitting across the table in person and then they can see your body language. But a lot of the times we're not so lucky. We might be on video calls, which is pretty good, or we might be just on the phone, or they might even like just be an email. So I wondered what was our body language doing to our voice. So what we did is we had participants come into our lab and we had them record different versions of their vocal first impression. So everyone's vocal first impression is hello, right? Like that one word that we often don't even think about. So we had them record 5 different trials. The first one was their neutral kind of control hello, just how they normally answer the phone. The second one we had them do with a happiness micro expression. So a genuine smile all the way up into the eyes, hello. Then we had them do a angry hello. So the anger micro expression, there's 7 universal micro expressions. The anger micro expression is when you pull your eyebrows down. So these 2 vertical lines appear. And it's hard to do it when I'm actually not angry, but you pull your eyebrows down, you harden your lower lid and you tense your lips and you say, hello. Then we had them do a sadness hello. So a sadness hello when you make a frowny face. And then we had them do a power posing hello. That was 5. And so power posing is when you stand as broad as possible. So what was interesting was the first question, the first hypothesis we had is, can you hear the difference? It was so obvious which hellos were the happy hellos and which were the angry hellos. It was like it was like different people. It was like listening to different people. So that was the first hypothesis, was absolutely that people can hear your body language. They can hear your facial expressions. Now, someone listening might not have realized that someone was holding an angry micro expression, but they knew there was irritation, frustration, difficulty, something negative. So that was the first part. The second part was we asked participants to listen to the hellos and rate the people on likability. So yeah, so this is like taking it a step farther. So we wanted to know, you know, if you hear someone say, hello, do you like them more? Or if you see someone power posing, do they sound more confident and therefore do you like them more? So this is where the results got interesting. Unsurprisingly, the happy people were 78% more likable, right? Great, right? Never answer the phone in a bad mood. Try to answer the phone in a positive frame of mind. That's easy. What was interesting though is the power posing hellos were right in the middle. So they did better than the angry and sad hellos, but actually not as good as the control and happy hellos. So this, yeah, this really busted a hypothesis that I had. I thought that power posing or standing really broad and confident was good in every situation. It turns out that standing broad and confident is great when you can see me, but when you can't see me, it actually sounds a little bit aggressive, a little bit dominant. So I'll try to mimic, you know, I'll try to make it more obvious. So a regular hello sounds something like this. Hello. Yeah, that's pretty typical neutral hello. A power posing hello sounded a little more like this. Hello. It was like a little bit more commanding. And that isn't always a good thing. And they weren't rated as unlikable. They were just much more in the middle. So what I would say is that if you're in person, if they can see you broader, you'll notice that I have my camera pushed back so you can see my hands. But if I'm just on the phone, actually your facial expressions, your happiness is far more even important than your body. And that's based on brand new research.
I love that. I think that's super applicable to anyone doing video calls, right? Because it's so easy to even just completely forget that someone's actually watching you the whole time you're talking to them. And you can revert to, you know, normal body language where you might look bored if you're on just a regular phone call.
Yeah. So that actually is an interesting point. I was on a podcast probably 2 years ago now. And so typically when I do podcasts and I know that it's just going to be audio at the end of the day, I actually try to turn off my video camera. The reason for that is because I know that they won't be able to see me. And so I shouldn't be optimizing for visual. I should be optimizing for audio, for vocal power. So I was, and this is kind of standard practice. And so the podcaster said, hey, I'd love to turn on our videos so we can see each other while we talk. And I said, if they're not going to get video, I'd prefer to leave it on audio. He's like, no, I really want to read your facial expressions. So I was like, okay, biggest mistake ever. So turn on the video. And this was one of those moments that it made me angry. And it also made me frustrated because I knew this was going to happen. So when I am fully concentrating, as anyone is, I tend to have resting bitch face. I don't know if you've heard about resting bitch face, but resting bitch face is when you look really angry and mean, even when you're just listening. So I'm going to show you my resting face and you'll see it's not so great. Okay, so here's my resting face. Now I look bored, maybe a little sad, maybe a little bitchy. Actually, that's just my neutral face. It's horrible, right? Like, so I know this about me. And so I was thinking so much on the verbal content and giving like really, really authentic, good answers that in the middle of one of my answers, he said, you know, am I boring you right now in the podcast? And I was like, no, I'm just listening to you and focusing. And he was like, oh, you look really bored. Now remember, if you're a listener, you don't get to see me. You're just listening. And so I was like, I'm not bored. I just have resting bitch face. So that was like the perfect example. The reason I share this is because if our brains take in a lot of information. And so if we're given a new input, like video or seeing something, it's like our brain, a whole different part of our brain lights up. Do not discount how powerful the visual information is. And that can work for you and against you, depending on how good you are. So if you feel that your body language or your facial expressions are not where you want them to be, you might actually try to optimize for audio, right? Like that might be, podcasting is a perfect medium for you. But if you know that visually you can handle it, like when I'm really trying, like right now, I can be up and hide my resting bitch face, then I'm okay on video. But I have to really make sure that I'm prepared for that so that I am ready to give you the best first impression with all of the inputs.
All right. So shifting gears a little bit now, I know you work with a lot of service providers, people who spend a lot of time pitching their services, selling themselves on a constant basis. And I know you've worked with like writers, marketers, developers, designers, salespeople, like it spans a huge spectrum of people.
My favorite people are creative or technical geniuses, like people who are exceptionally good at their programming or their creative skills, but need help on the people skills. Those are like my favorite people. Yeah.
I love that. Okay, so with that group of people, that subset of people that we're talking about then, what do you feel has been the most successful or effective sales technique that you've ever witnessed or even employed yourself?
Yeah, so this was a really clear lesson. I originally built my website, it was around the lab, around my writing, and I had kind of the typical opt-ins, typical funnel, typical sales pages for me to either be a corporate speaker. I don't do coaching or consulting, so it's mostly corporate speaking or like a course. And it was converting. It was doing okay. But then I got really clear on what I just mentioned to you, that my favorite students, so in an online course, you never know who's going to sign up, right? Because you kind of put up your online course and you hope for people to sign up. And I realized that the students who I loved working with, the ones who excelled through the course, the ones who I would hope that they would be on office hours because I like loved their presence so much, fell into this very specific category. As I mentioned, typically in almost the brilliant category, like very above average in their creative and technical work, usually high achievers, high performance pace, if they like the fast pace. And they just needed a little help on the social side of things, like giving feedback, team communication, collaboration. And so I realized that the problem was I wasn't signaling to these people early enough because I was losing them in the top of the funnel, or I was getting in the wrong people into my classes. So I teach very fast. I do not repeat myself. I expect you to be able to keep up with me. I don't hammer a point home more than once or twice. That's just the way that I like to teach. So what would happen was I would get people into my course who were maybe a little bit slower learners. They wanted more examples or more repeating things. They wanted audience participation. And they would either ask for a refund or give me a no review or a negative or neutral review. And I realized like they're great, but they're just not my people. Like that's cool. Like they're not my people. So I started to change the language. I call these interest indicators. So very, very clear, like that's me. So I started using words like, we are looking for high performers. This is a fast-paced course. If you like things to be repeated, do not sign up for this course. And I realized that I was turning off more people, but those were the wrong people anyway. And then we started getting these very, very high-quality leads. And if you want, I'm happy to talk about like very specifics on that. If you want, I'm happy to. But yeah, that was the biggest one.
I love that. Yeah. If you don't mind, actually explain more.
Sure. Yes. So one of the concepts that I use when I teach sales is I think a lot about someone's personality matrix. So when you talk about personality, I think you might have read this in my book too, is that there's five basic personality traits that everyone has. And I encourage in my book as well for people to create a personality matrix for their ideal customer or student. So basically, you think about your ideal customer or student and you define them from a personality perspective. Typically, marketers and business owners think about pain points, solutions, worries, all good, all great. I think actually the magic is in the personality. So let's take one personality trait for it as an example. So one personality trait that I work with a lot is conscientiousness. So conscientiousness is organization, how much you like routines, how much you like lists, how detail-oriented you are. Now, I don't teach productivity at all. I don't teach list making or routines or efficiency. However, I have learned that if someone is high in conscientiousness and is already very productive and efficient, they will like my courses because we teach a lot of steps, frameworks, equations, algorithms. So I started to put up conscientiousness indicators all over my website and all over my sales pages. So instead of saying, in this course, you will learn all of our people skills for mastering social success, I would take that phrase and I would say, in our 12-step video-based training course, you will learn our framework for understanding social success, including a 3-step conversational blueprint, the hierarchy of facts. You'll get a master checklist the moment you get into a course, and we will have 12 assignments for you to do, blah, 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 right? Adding those things, my high conscientious people, it was like, I don't know, am I allowed to say naughty words in this summit?
Absolutely.
Okay. So it's, we call it a data-induced boner, like a really like real excited about it. You know what I mean? And so that we want that. So like that indicator, if you don't like lists and you're the creative kind of free flowy type, you're going to hate my conversational blueprint, right? Because those people don't need help with conversation. They can talk about anything. I want the people who are like, tell me what to say. I never want to run out of something to say again. That's my person. So putting that kind of language up front, it got rid of the people who wanted the free flowy, didn't have that pain point. And it got the people who learned the way that I teach. The conversion rates were insane. The moment that we changed that language on the page, I mean, it was like we had a different course. So I would think about the five personality traits. You're welcome to use the matrix that's in my book. I think it's chapter 7. Fill it out for yourself, like how you teach, and then fill it out for your ideal student. You'll probably find there are 2 to 3 personality traits that you're really going after. For me, it's high conscientiousness, high openness, and low introversion or low extroversion. So introverts. Those are the 3 that I'm like, I'm looking for you, you know? So I would think about what your 3 are and indicate the heck out of them all over your sales pages. That was a long answer.
So you might have already treaded on some of your answer for this, but I'm curious if anything else comes to mind in terms of some of the biggest mistakes the salespeople make, or, you know, pitfalls that are very, very common, or the biggest misunderstanding that people make when they're out there selling their services or trying to sell a product.
Yeah. So I think, I would say the very biggest mistake is not being very clear on who you are, but I already talked about that. So I'll talk about another overlooked thing, which is your sales experience is not just your landing page. I know that we like to think that, right? If we have a course or a product or a feature, we have one brochure or one landing page and we make it amazing. The problem is very rarely is your customer journey just that landing page. It's the homepage, it's the email they use to get there, it's the social media posts that you use to get them there, it's your social media bios, it's your pictures within the website, it's the confirmation link they get when they bought, it's the thank you page when they've signed up. So I would try to think about every single piece of your customer journey, because every single thing is a part of your sales process. Even the thank you page, that's going to help you get really amazing loyalty, great customer reviews, adoption, people actually using your product. So I would actually start from like the very, very beginning of any possible way that someone could find your brand and get to the landing page. Even the most distant. It could even be this summit right here, right? Like today, even though I'm here giving information, it's possible that someone watching is like, that's me. I need that course. So I know that even the way I talk about my course and my product right now is the start of that customer journey. So think about all the ways and all the way through to the very end of they're done using your product and now what? That I think is the biggest mistake that people make. They put all their eggs in the landing page basket.
Yes. I've seen that a lot, especially when it comes to, you know, people that are selling online courses and things like that, right? The digital products.
And I was guilty of that too for a long time. It wasn't until much, much later, that's why I'm sharing this with you now, mm-hmm. that I realized, oh, my thank you page has nothing on it. Or my confirmation email is boring as fuck. Like, I don't want to be boring, right? Like, we joke in our lab that we're allergic to boring. Like, I feel that people sign up for so many boring things that we have to have like TED Talk style teaching in all areas. So if my confirmation email is boring, it's totally counter to my entire brand and my promise. I just promised them a non-boring experience. Why would I give them a boring email? It's actually inauthentic. So thinking about that, and I made that mistake for far too long.
So, all right, Vanessa, I consider myself to be an introvert with learned extrovert traits. Do you have any particular tips that might be, you know, specifically relevant to someone who identifies as an introvert at being a better salesperson?
Yeah, so many. I feel like that's my entire business. In a weird way, that's almost specific tips for introverts trying to sell themselves could be a tagline for the website in a certain way. First thing is most people who think they're introverts are actually ambiverts. So an ambivert is somewhere in between an introvert and extrovert. This is actually me, and we have an ambivert test on our website. You're welcome to take it. 82% of people who take that test or take the personality test are actually ambiverts. So on that test, it's been very interesting to see how people answer it. Most people who thought they were introverts originally are actually this in-between. So ambiverts are able to kind of dial up when they have to or dial down when they have to. They really need recharge time. They prefer alone time, but they also do like the right kind of social situation. Like if it's the right social situation, they love it, right? Learning, teaching, even with their close group of friends. If you're a true introvert, it's very rare that you're going to find even any social situation that you're going to like. So I would say that most salespeople, especially if you're regularly pitching yourself, are probably ambiverts. Probably. And if that's true, or if you're an introvert, you have to find those scenarios, those topics, those projects that make you feel like, yes, I can dial up. Do not even try. And this is what I think is like the metaphor I usually give is with athletes. Like you would never tell a 5'2" man to go out for the basketball team. He sure could. Absolutely he could. But he might be better off being a jockey, right? Like that might be a better, he's setting himself up for success based on his natural talents. Same thing for you. So you probably have natural talent. So if you're listening, maybe that's, you're a great storyteller. You're not good at big parties, but you're a great storyteller. Or maybe it's, you're really good one-on-one over coffee. You do not like presenting in small groups, right? Small groups of people, it's like, oh, there's too many people to focus on. Or maybe you love being on stage, but you really don't like the one-to-one rapport in loud networking events, right? So I want you to start to separate out like the no-go, I call those survive zones versus the thrive zones. The ones where you're like, yes, like this is my jam. That's when you can start to optimize your sales process for that. Like for example, I hate the phone. that's why I did the vocal power study. Like there's something about the phone that has just always eluded me. So in my sales process, I have done everything possible to avoid the phone conversation. I don't offer free consulting calls. I don't do coaching calls. I don't have any kind of phone consult beforehand. We do either videos, like we exchange videos back and forth, or in-person meetings, and lots of email follow-up. I know because that's just where my ambiversion hides on the phone. So I would think about how you can alter your sales process to better fit your natural tendencies.
What's the most important deal you've ever personally been a part of closing?
My book deal. So what's interesting about this, is that what you mean? Is that the right question? Yeah. So I've written many books before, mostly self-published, but also traditionally published. And I was done. I was like, I'm done writing books. I don't want to ever write a book again. They do well. But I thought to myself, how can you really teach body language in a book? I like video and I love writing, but I was like, I have a blog. I have video courses. I don't need a book. Of course, whenever you say never, never works out that way, right? The universe always about that. So I was like, I'm never writing a book. And I'd gotten approached by a couple publishers. I was like, no, no, no. And I was speaking at a conference called World Domination Summit. I don't know if you know it. It's in Portland, Oregon. So I was speaking at World Domination Summit. I got off stage. I was in the green room. And this woman sneaks backstage in the green room. And she's like, my name is Nikki. This is my current editor. And I want to publish your book. And I was like, oh, Nikki, like, that's so sweet. But I'm good. Like, I don't want to write a book. I'm done writing books. She's like, no, I'm going to publish your book. And she was the most wonderfully relentless editor. And we had to negotiate for me to be able to write the book that I wanted to write. The hardest part of closing that deal was not getting them to say yes. It was getting them to say yes to a very specific kind of experience that I wanted with this book. And that I think was the absolute hardest and most thrilling and the best decision I could have made. Like the book hit the bestseller list. The response we've gotten has been life-changing. So I'm so grateful that I stuck to my guns, but it was really hard. It was really, really hard in the beginning.
So with something like a book deal, you have a lot of the power, I'm guessing, as you know, the writer, the person who's out there going to be selling the book. Were there any other particular strategies? Do you feel like we're at play behind the scenes and making sure that you kept your reins on your book?
Yeah. So I think that oftentimes authors are actually not in the power position. For my first traditionally published book, I certainly wasn't, right? Most authors are like, any advance is great. And that was definitely me the first round. So what I would say, the biggest learning experience I had, and it's a kind of funny story. So it's one of my favorite metaphors. Are you ready for my favorite story? All right. So one time a man was driving with his daughter down the street and he saw a little boy on the side of the road with a big basket. And there was a sign that said puppies for sale. And in the basket, there were beautiful little puppies. So he pulls over with his daughter, and his daughter really wants a puppy. He's like, you know, I've been thinking about getting a puppy. And the daughter's like, oh my gosh, I want this puppy so bad. And the dad says, okay. And he asked the little boy, maybe 6 or 7 year old boy sitting there. He said, so how much is the puppy? And the little boy goes, this puppy is $1,000. And the guy is like, $1,000 for a puppy? What are you? Are you crazy? And the little boy goes, sir, this is the best, most amazing puppy in the entire world. He is worth every penny of that $1,000. And he starts to negotiate. And the guy is negotiating and negotiating. His daughter is falling in love with the puppy. And the kid would not budge. So he says, you know what? I'm going to get my daughter out of the situation and come back and negotiate tomorrow. So they leave. He comes back the next day. He sees the boy is still sitting there. No one's bought the puppy. Not surprisingly, for $1,000. Goes up. So you can lower your price for me. This is day two. And the boy goes, no, sir. This is the best puppy in the entire world. $1,000. Doesn't sell it. He walks away. He can't get the puppy. A few weeks later, he sees a little boy on the playground. And he says, hey, kid, did you ever sell that puppy? And the boy goes, yeah. And the guy's like, for $1,000? And he's like, yeah. Another girl gave me two $500 kitties. In other words, someone else found that there was something else that was not monetary worth the $1,000. So he gave away his puppy to get two $500 kitties. This is the best metaphor I have for negotiation and sales. A book deal is not just about the money. There are so many other kitties up for grab. So the biggest thing that I learned and that I got from the book was it was not just the advance. It was the publicity schedule. It was control over the cover. It was research publications. It was publicity. It was media and PR help. It was a budget for a launch strategy. It was props for the book. It was live events. It was reaching out to their speaking contacts, probably 20 kitties. And so like what I say to you is, and this is what I tell all my students, is find the kitty. Right? Like there has to be a kitty, and it's not just a dollar amount. So when you're thinking about closing that deal, do not just make it about one thing. There has to be other items of value that you can either get or find.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I think that's also applicable to anyone selling literally anything, right? Because they can come to the table with this list of like, you know, things they can trade basically.
And like, for example, our courses, like we have a course that's right now that's up for $1,000. Pretty applicable to the story, right? It's up for $1,000. And we had someone approach us and was like, hey, all I have is $500 to take this course. However, here's why. And I want to write you a testimonial afterwards. I'm going to film a video testimonial. I'm going to be in Portland later this year. I can even come to your studio and film it. I would love to actually offer it to my students, and I'll be an affiliate for you. I was like, yeah, great. We would love to have you. Because there were so many much more valuable things for me that I was happy to offer him a scholarship for the course. And that was on a listed price on a course on my website that we are selling. So there's always kitties. Always.
All right, Vanessa. Well, this is my last question for you. What's been the best investment you've ever made in the context of building your selling skills? And this could be in the form of time, money, online tools, products, education, services, or otherwise.
A video studio. So we finally built a video studio in my house, and I hired a full-time video editor, video manager. I made the decision maybe 4 years ago when I started seeing the amount of YouTube traffic. You know, now our YouTube channel has like 10 million views on it. That people were using YouTube instead of Google. That YouTube is a search engine. It's not a video channel. It's not just a video platform. And so we decided to double down on that video. And I like video. I like the mode. This is before I decided to write another book, right? Because I was like, I'm on video all in. That was one of the great decisions we made because YouTube is now our biggest converter for sales. We do no advertising on YouTube, and we make most of our income from YouTube, to online courses, to speaking, to consulting. It's our biggest lead generator. So I think that the video studio and then hiring a full-time person to manage video and to manage a YouTube channel was the greatest choice. Hard one, scary one, but a really great one.
But you're basically doubling down, or even more, I would say, on what you're best at and what's working most. I think that's really applicable.
And as an ambivert, right? Like I know that I'm better on video, so I should double down on it. And it's the same thing for you. Find your method, whatever that is. It could be podcasts, it could be video, it could be email pitching, it could be writing amazing sales pages. Double down on that, because then you're optimizing for your natural strengths as opposed to trying to be something you're not.
All right. Awesome. Well, Vanessa, thank you so much for joining us. Can you tell everyone viewing here today where they can go to check you out online and see everything that you're up to?
Yeah. So everything is at scienceofpeople.com. That's where our lab is. The Ambivert quiz is scienceofpeople.com/ambivert, if you think you are one. It's a free little quiz you can take. And I'm just so grateful for everyone listening. I wish you the best with all your sales success.
All right. Thanks, Vanessa.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Side Hustle Project, I would love your support. Head on over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating. And as always, you can catch every episode of the Side Hustle Project on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for tuning in.